You may remember a controversy a few years ago engendered by a newspaper piece that my next guest wrote. Her name is Ayelet Waldman, and the piece she wrote was about her own role as a mom and about her husband and her kids. In that piece, she wrote, "Why am I the only one incapable of placing her children at the center of her passionate universe? If a good mother is one who loves her child more than anyone else in the world, I am not a good mother. In fact, I am a bad mother. I love my husband more than I love my children. An example, I often engage in the parental pastime known as God forbid. What if, God forbid, someone were to snatch one of my children? God forbid, I imagine what it would feel like to lose one or even all of them. I imagine myself consumed, destroyed by the pain, and yet in these imaginings, there's always a future beyond the child's death. Because if I were to lose one of my children, God forbid, even if I lost all of my children, God forbid, I would still have him, my husband. But my imagination simply fails me when I try to picture a future beyond my husband's death. Of course, I would have to live. I have four children, a mortgage, work to do, but I can imagine no joy without my husband." So in that one piece, which went on and on and on, she invoked what she called the role of herself as bad mother. And wow, did the world come crashing down around her. Now she's written about that experience in a book called Bad Mother, a chronicle of maternal crimes, minor calamities, and occasional moments of grace. Ayelet Waldman, welcome to News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, it's nice to have you here. Tell me about the fallout from that piece.
Yeah, well, you would have thought I had actually picked my kids up and thrown them off the overpass into oncoming traffic.
Yeah.
It was pretty crazy. I feel like I should explain that line. I had just finished this novel called Love and Other Impossible Pursuits, which is about to be a movie starring Natalie Portman, that was about a mother whose baby dies of SIDS and how it just she's completely derailed by the despair. And so I had spent all this time imagining what it was like to be a mother who loses her children. That was my job to do in order to write this novel. But I don't really feel like I would have the beginnings of an idea of how to write a novel about a widow, to write those emotions honestly. And that's really what I was talking about there. I think what ended up happening, sort of the fallout, was a gazillion email messages, people leaving notes on my front gate telling me that, you know, they know where I live and my children should be taken away from me. With some, I guess, the implication that they could do that if they wanted to.
Nice.
Yeah, crazy. Ending up on Star Jones of The View taking off after me as if somehow her marriage was a model for the rest of America's. Yeah. And I even went on Oprah. Oprah, God bless her, had me on the show because she agreed with me. But her audience, they were not a happy group.
Oprah agreed with you even though she's not a mom.
Yeah, I mean, what Oprah was saying when she had me on the show is that she had diagnosed this kind of low-grade depression amongst her audience, the vast majority of whom were mothers, and that she felt like that came from this kind of self-abnegation, this notion that if you're a mother, you can't be anything else, or whatever else you are doesn't matter, and that she was, you know, this is sort of one part of what she saw. And so she had me there to talk about that. And, you know, the whole essay started because I was wondering why nobody I knew was having any sex. In all honesty, that's how it came about.
Mm-hmm.
And the highlight of the show for me was when this woman said, "Well, I'm not like you. I'm a good mother. I have four children, and I never have sex with my husband. In fact, on the rare occasions where I let him do his business, and that's a quote, I watch television."
Wow.
So there's a role model for you, huh?
Yeah. By the way, did you not realize you're on television? That's one of those moments where I want to take that person aside and say, "You see the cameras?"
Yeah, and the guy was in the audience. He has to go to work tomorrow. I mean, if he wasn't cheating on her before she announced on national television that he never got any action, he sure was going to do it the next day. You know? It was so insane. There was another woman who said, you know, that I was a terrible mother and she was a good mother, and she only had her kids for 18 years, and at the end of 18 years, her husband was still going to be there. And I thought, really? Really? You're so sure? Because I don't know if you've ever met a heterosexual man, but I think 18 years may be a little long for the average guy to go.
What was it like backstage before you even went out there and faced this Oprah throng?
Well, in all honesty, I did not know that there was going to be a throng because, like I said, I knew that Oprah agreed with me. So I sort of thought it would be this wonderful little conversation between me and Oprah and maybe a couple of experts talking about how right I was about every little last thing. So well, I was getting my makeup done in the green room and my hair, and I was mostly fixated on the humongous pimple I had sprouting like Mount Vesuvius from my chin.
Of course, you're only going to be on national television.
Yeah,
what's a better time?
The world's biggest zit, not okay. And I heard this kind of, like these screaming harp. The way I remember them is like the shrieking harpies, like Macbeth, you know, passing their eye around the cauldron. But I'm sure it wasn't quite so bad. But and I said, wait a minute, what's that? And the producer said, well, that's what I've been trying to tell you. We've assembled, we're doing a sort of alternate format. We're doing kind of living room style. We've assembled a group of women. Most of them hate you, but hey, you are a criminal defense attorney. You're used to hostile juries. You'll be fine.
Nice.
And they were, but you know what's so amazing is I really do have to hand it to Oprah. I think she's magnificent. And it was like, you know how when they turn a cruise ship in mid-ocean and it takes like, you know, 20 minutes or how 6 hours or whatever it is, and it's just like, turns around in midstream. That's what she did with that audience. I walked on the stage, and one woman actually lunged at me saying, let me at her. And by the time I left the stage, everyone was saying, oh, of course, Ayala, it's 100% right. We just didn't like how she said it. So you got to give Oprah credit, man.
Now, did you hear from women who agreed with you and said, finally, somebody saying what I...
Yeah, the vast majority of women I heard from agreed with me. I mean, you know, you can always find the crazy people are always the ones who are going to go public. I mean, the vast majority of my email, the vast majority of the letters to the editor were very, very positive. And you want to know what's crazy? After I was on Oprah, some of those women started emailing me, the big haters, telling me that, you know, they were so unhappy, and their marriages were such a disaster, and what were they going to do? Mm. And all I could think of was, well, maybe the first thing you should do is, like, stop, you know, screaming at the people who disagree with you.
Yeah. That would be a good place to start.
Yeah, that would be a good place to start. The other one, there's this one woman who was like, you know, my life is so hard, and they had filmed her with her children. And she was a very lovely woman, but, like, every kid played 14 instruments and had 75 activities and gymnastics. And then she spent all her days in the car. And I thought, and I actually emailed her and I said, okay, step one, get rid of the harpsichord. That's just, you know, step mm-hmm. one. Then yeah. we can talk about how else we're going to make your life a little easier.
How did your kids handle this? I mean, Sophie was only like 11 years old. Your
yeah,
oldest
she was
11.
I sat them down and I was very nervous. You know, I was like, oh my God, Sophie's. I mean, I knew she wasn't going to read the New York Times because I don't know about your kids, but my kids are not precocious enough to be reading the New York Times of a morning.
No.
But I figured that there was at least a chance that somebody was going to watch the Oprah show and be like, hey, your mommy doesn't love you. So I sat her down and I was so worried and I told her the whole thing before I even went on the show. And she just kind of looked at me, rolled her eyes, and said, duh, and walked away. And I think it's really, like, my kids, they don't doubt for a minute how much they're loved. I mean, really, you can't spend... I just bought my 6-year-old son a drum set, okay? That's
yeah.
love for you.
Mm-hmm.
But what they get from, you know, what they also have is this real confidence that their parents are going to stay together. And as more and more, every year, you know, you get a school directory back in every class with all the parents' phone numbers. And every year, more and more of those kids have two sets of phone numbers and addresses. And, you know, my kids don't have any anxiety about that. They don't worry that mommy and daddy are going to get divorced because they see that mommy and daddy are completely in love. And that's not to say we don't fight. I mean, God knows we fight. We have, you know, we're both, I'm from a very loud family. When in doubt, scream at the top of your lungs. So we fight, you know, like most couples do, but they also see that, you know, you can fight and make up and still love each other.
Now, in the years since you wrote that piece and you've been working on other things, including more of your Mommy Track mysteries and other books, and, of course, this new book, Bad Mother, has your relationship with your kids changed in any way compared to how you wrote about it 4 years ago?
Well, you know, the process of writing this book has made me much mellower, I have to say. It's made me, you know, because I spent a lot of time thinking about why do we beat ourselves up so much? I mean, why are we so worried about being bad mothers? Why do we get so involved with, like, the bad mother of the moment? Like, right now, you know, John and Kate plus 8, they're, whatever, splitting up, not splitting up. And the whole all I've been hearing about for the past few days in the media is what a horrible mother Kate is. And she may or may not. I don't know. But, you know, all that we want to talk about is what a terrible mother she is. And, you know, he's the guy who cheated. So it's like we're so ready to attack the mother. And I think we are so ready. And by that, I mean women. I think women are doing most of that attacking. I think, you know, we're our worst enemies. And I think that comes because we're so completely full of anxiety about, you know, whether we are bad mothers. And having spent, you know, a year thinking about that and writing the book, I actually have been able to kind of ease up a little bit. Just maybe, you know, not worry so much about being bad or good. Just recognize that I'm both. I'm neither. You know, some days I'm both at the same time, you know.
Now, the subtitle of your book is A Chronicle of Maternal Crimes, Minor Calamities, and Occasional Moments of Grace. Putting aside what everybody would consider a crime, what do you consider a maternal crime?
Well, that's sort of a, you know, that's the joke on the things that we decide are like criminal, maternally criminal activity. Like there have been days where, you know, I felt like my failure to bring snack to the park rose to the level of, you know, felony.
Yeah.
It's just, you work yourself up into these, you know, like my kids are the one eating Tic Tacs covered with purse lint, and the ones across the way have organic goldfish and, you know, carefully cut up fruit. I mean, those kinds of things to times when I, you know, there are times when I actually have failed my children. You know, when I didn't notice that my son, you know, one of my sons has some minor learning issues, but, you know, we spent a year in and out of his teacher's office telling him to try harder, pay more attention in class, before we actually bothered to get him diagnosed and realized that he, in fact, was trying very hard to pay attention, but he had attention deficit disorder. And that, to me, felt, that was a moment where I really felt ashamed of myself, like I hadn't protected my kid. I had been too quick to think that he was misbehaving when really he was in pain.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the taking the snack thing with you. Several years ago when my daughter, who's now 15, was much younger, I was a dad who was working a morning shift, and so I could spend lots of time with her in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And I wrote this column about how when I would go out with her, I would never take a snack with me. And my wife would say, how can you go and take her to the park or wherever and not have...
You scammed off the mommies, didn't you?
I guess I did, because in her world, that's what everybody did. And I said to her, you know, if you went out without the little Cheerios cup with her one day, I know that you're an adult, and if the kid was hungry, you could find her food somewhere.
Forage in the grass. Well, it is definitely true that, like, the dads are given... Dads, it's so easy for dads. The bar is so low. You'll always get goldfish from the neighboring moms. But the mom who fails to bring the goldfish, all she's going to get is a, you know, look of disdain. My favorite story about how low the bar is for you guys is my husband was at a cafe getting coffee. So he's wearing the baby in a baby Bjorn. But he's getting coffee. He's not thinking about the baby. He's maybe thinking about the Giants. Maybe thinking about whether he can get a quadruple shot instead of a triple shot. And this woman taps him on the shoulder and she says, oh, you're such a great dad. And I thought, you know what I would have to do? You know what I would have to do for a stranger to tap me on the shoulder and tell me what a great mom I was? I would have to perform an emergency tracheotomy on one kid with a Bic pen while diapering the other and helping the third with her calculus. That would just maybe get it. And probably not. People would be like, you know, you really are making a terrible mess with all that blood.
The book is called Bad Mother, A Chronicle of Maternal Crimes, Minor Calamities, and Occasional Moments of Grace. I yell at Waldman. Thanks for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much. It was a pleasure.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Dave Ross Show on News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM.